Blog Talk Radio.
Tornado warning in effect for the Harleysville area. Did you hear that?
Again?
I played the clip. I think I sent you a copy of it before. But I opened
Oh, that when you left me on my voicemail, I could barely hear it. I was in the car.
Tornado warning. So, watch out. Tony's going to take over the show tonight.
That's right. Number one guy in this business.
Well, we had a pretty interesting week. Floyd Mayweather worked out here in Las Vegas on Tuesday. And I got there right before the Jesse Vargas workout was finished. Actually, it was starting when I got there. It's a pretty tight gym. But Floyd came in there, and it was like a whole different story. I've never seen so many cameras flock to one dude. And they like the real rock.
Did you see the HBO crew then, or were they not there?
Everybody was there. Freaking Al Bernstein was there. They should be out.
Hello, Al. I said hi.
I did say, remind him of the show. He said that was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Sincere, but it was like so sincere that I was just like, whatever. He probably doesn't even remember why.
I'm sure Al remembers me.
But he was hamming it up, and then actually right in the middle of Floyd's workout, he was like between stations, and he like took over Al Bernstein's station. Even though Al wasn't filming anything, he was just like creeping right up on him and stealing his spotlight for a second. But I got the impression from watching Floyd work out that the whole thing with his father was probably a result of just having a whole different atmosphere when he trained, just being changed by his father being there, saying stuff all the time. You know, no matter what it is, it's like he's been dealing with Roger so much, that's what works for him. And he took over, like, the whole place, including his own staff. Like, I actually was standing directly next to Leonard Ellerbe on the ring apron. And I saw him, like, looking at the stopwatch, and Floyd would come over every 2 seconds and, you know, give him a look. But, you know, nobody was yelling, like, do this, do that. Floyd was, you know, deciding what would happen, basically, it seemed, every step of the way. So I get the impression that he just likes it that way. And, you know, his father kind of screwed shit up.
Well, here's the thing. I've been watching with 24/7 shows. I mean, you can definitely tell that Floyd Jr. is in charge. I mean, you can tell he's in charge of the operation. And a lot of times, like, if he's saying something, you know, that's the way he wants it done. The fact that he's been so successful, I mean, and like I said, he runs his own show, so it's kind of hard for the guys to disagree with him. You know, if he was a guy that was, you know, say, like, 24-4, he's, like, you know, fighting for a world title, yeah, it's not going to be that way. But, you know, he runs his own show. He does nothing the way he likes him because he's been successful. Now, along the lines of his father, Floyd Jr. has an ego. Absolutely.
No.
Floyd Sr. has a top win. I mean, nobody can train him better than his daddy. And that would piss Floyd. I mean, I think if they wanted to make a real pay-per-view in a 24/7, they should have Floyd Sr. versus Roger, you know? Because you can definitely know there would be animosity. And there's two guys with egos right there. I mean, they would say they're the best. And Floyd Jr. is now going against his father saying, my uncle's better than you are, and you can't train nobody. And he had a point. Floyd Jr. said what I've been saying for years, and he said it exactly the same point that John Scully, Al Bernstein, and I all said. Oscar De La Hoya went downhill when he started training with Floyd Sr. And the fight that we keep referencing is the Felix Sturm fight. De La Hoya was getting his ass kicked. He got his ass kicked. And Floyd Sr. was not able to give him credible advice. And I'd like to see in a fight that Floyd Jr. is really losing or behind or getting beat up, that I would like to see the credible advice his Uncle Roger could give him. Because, I mean, it's easy when you're dominating a fight, like when he's dominating Shane Mosley, or when he was beating a smaller man like Juan Manuel Marquez, it's easy to see and say that, this guy's a bum, you want to be knocking this guy out. You know, you're doing good out there, you're boxing beautiful. That's easy to say. My dog could say that. But the real trust of a trainer is taking a guy that's losing or a guy that's, you know, struggling out there and making a strategic change in this fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. I don't know, Floyd, supposedly, is in focus on this fight coming up with Ortiz. But he avoided really most of the questions about the lawsuits and all that other stuff. And I recently just, you know, decided to do a search on the legal case. And there's an update from August 17th that talks about the defamation case that Pacquiao has against him. And from earlier indications, I would have thought that no way, because of this case, this fight goes forward between Manny and Floyd. But I start reading this stuff, and I'm thinking, Floyd doesn't even give a crap now at this point. He's going to do the fight regardless. And he actually hasn't shown up for any court appearances. He said that he's been training for this fight. But the thing is, Manny supposedly has gone out and gotten private investigators to take pictures of Floyd out at parties and socializing with guys like 50 Cent. And it's getting dirty, you know. These guys are really vicious. And there's actually a report that both Roger and Floyd have made mention of Manny's steroid issue at the gym, you know, within earshot of people. So I think he might be a little bit stressed out about that, but he's like, he doesn't even care about the court case anymore. And they're talking like, as long as he takes the test, they'll fight him now. It's not so much never to happen anymore. I don't know, because I think, like, you know, the shares on this fight are going down. You know what I mean? It's like Wall Street. So it's got to happen in 2012, or it's not going to happen at all. Because there was another report that says Manny wants to get a promotion in the political circles out there in the Philippines. So that's going to require quitting boxing when that position comes around for re-election. And that's like 2013 or something. So 2012 is going to have to be the year, you know, for this fight. So I think it's going to happen. Of course, it all depends on what Floyd can do on the 17th and what happens when he faces Marquez next. But I think it's going to happen. You know, you think about it, we're in a down economy, and these guys come in and make $50 million each for a fight. Could happen. That's going to make boxing look like the king of the world, you know, especially compared to the UFC paying guys like max $500,000 sometimes, you know, for a main event. So, I don't know. We'll see. But I think the lawsuit is less of a factor now because I guess Manny's attitude, I mean, Floyd's attitude doesn't even acknowledge it. At the point where they're seeing a default judgment. But the workout was great. I mean, he even ripped into a Yankees fan, a reporter on the sidelines. It was funny. He made a $2.5 million bet, informal, you know, unofficial, of course, to the cameras. He said, you know, Ortiz and Oscar De La Hoya, I want to bet him each $2.5 million that I'm going to win this fight. And I didn't hear what the kid said. I was about 30 feet away from him when he said it. But I see him, like, bend down behind the first row of reporters when he's talking into his little tape recorder about the bet. And his voice starts yelling at him about being a hater. And he brought his wife over and everything. He made fun of the kid, even though the kid said he was a boxer, you know. And he's like, "You never boxed. You suck." And all this crap about him. And then I realized I had a picture of him on my camera by the side of the ring during the fight session there, so I put it up on the blog. I felt bad for that guy. I was lucky I got my question answered by Floyd, because first thing he gets in the ring, he had just gone through at least about an hour of interviews already, and I didn't even bother to try to get near the press room when he first got in the place. I actually picked up a spot. I had to leave. The camera ran out of battery. I had to go, it's in the middle of Chinatown, I had to go to some Chinese liquor store three blocks up, and I decided to go walking on foot. Thankfully, Floyd took a ton of time getting ready to have his hand wraps. Anyway, he took a big break after the press had their way with him for a while. And then basically he comes in, gets his hands wrapped, and at that point I had gotten back maybe 5 minutes before, so I was up on the ring apron. Right directly overhead. I mean, I had a perfect vantage point of all that. And then once the actual session in the ring started, Leonard Ellerbe gets up and he's standing right next to me the whole time, like elbowing me half the time for room. So that was kind of interesting, you know, because he's one of the head honchos there with Floyd, and he was the timekeeper. But when he got in the ring, finally, I asked him, what do you love most about boxing? I had to ask it twice to get him to even answer. He didn't even look at me. He was just like, everything.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the best answer we've gotten so far on that question, I think. I've never had that answer before, I don't think. But then he got into his rhythm. Get in there. Within seconds, he wanted the air conditioning off. And he went and did his thing. It was definitely one of the better experiences I've had down here in Vegas. Just being able to understand what he deals with, you know, from that perspective. You might see the episodes and you know, think you can understand it. But once you're actually there with him, and you see how he reacts to all these cameras in his face, like literally in his face. maybe you can, you know, at least see what he deals with. You know, maybe understand why he's such a public figure. And he actually thanked the media for keeping him relevant at one point. So that was interesting too. You know, he at least appreciates the fact that even when he's not boxing, he's going to be in the news. And Roger Mayweather, I mean, one thing that struck me about him, I was sitting right next to him for most of his interviews with the press, and I couldn't hear a word he said most of the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He is so soft-spoken, you know. He does not...
I thought he can't speak.
He does make sense every now and then.
Every now and then, rarely.
and it just struck me how relaxed he was. I mean, this guy does not have a care in the world. He's got a great life. You know, he's just lounging at ringside, waiting for these press people to come up to him. And, you know, there's people lined up to talk to him for about 20 minutes. And as soon as Floyd walks in, I'm just like, drop like flies. Roger, and go right to Floyd. I think it ended up being like one guy hanging in there and finishing the interview. But as soon as Floyd came in the gym, everybody's like, I'm out. And I like the gym setup there, too. It's pretty cozy. It's very professional. You know, everybody's wearing these T-shirts that says, We Make Champions. And, you know, you got a guy like Floyd come in there and brings all that press. I mean, cameras galore, writers, TV people. Just, you wouldn't believe the crowd. And it was definitely a fun time. I got to meet one of their youngest prospects, too, a little cash flow. Floyd Cashflow Diaz. He was a character. You already got that little man's complex, you know. I gotta go around the gym acting cool. Who I am. 8 years old. There's actually already a fight of his on YouTube. So my little clip of him was not the first YouTube sensation out there on this kid. But other than that, we had some interesting MMA news this week. Days ago, we had an episode there with Nick Diaz. Speaking of boxing, this is a guy who threatened to go box Jeff Lacy. Rather than continue with his Strikeforce contract after beating up on a guy named Paul Daly in the first Strikeforce event that Dana White actually witnessed as an owner. So to avoid having this guy go over to boxing, Dana White said, all right, well, we're going to give you this title fight with George St. Pierre. And turns out Nick Diaz doesn't go to the press conferences. skipped 3 press conferences. Doesn't want to go. Gosh, supposedly slipped out the back door of his trainer's house. And then there's a response video of his out there where he tries to explain himself, doesn't really get around to telling anybody why he didn't go to these press conferences. But he starts off the video saying, he was on his way to the airport to go when he found out. But there's also stories out there that he's got anxiety disorder. So press conferences aren't the best therapy for a person with anxiety or social anxiety disorder. I guess not a good thing. But for whatever reason, he gave up this opportunity to fight St. Pierre. Now, Carlos Condit will be taking Diaz has always been a weird character. He's tested positive for weed after fights in the past, way in the past. But he also does triathlons. He's in shape. He's one of the best boxers in MMA. And when he decided he was going to go into boxing, he wasn't joking around. Now he might actually have to. But I think it's interesting that Dana White just signed Alistair Overeem, who was another guy who said he wanted to go into boxing. And, Dana White just signed this big deal with Fox. They're on a roll. They got a lot of support going in their favor. And the last thing he needs is these big names in MMA saying, screw this, I'm not getting paid enough, I'm going to box. And I think he thought he could avoid that with Nick Diaz, even if it meant having to deal with his, reputation and track record for dealing with the public and just being off the wall. So he fired him. He threw him out of the UFC, and apparently that's, the last straw. You don't show up to your press conferences. How does he know he's going to show up to the fight? That's it. That's all she wrote for him in the UFC anyway. I doubt Dana White will change his mind. That just means he's getting more desperate to box, so we're going to see how good an MMA guy transitions back to boxing. We've already seen boxers doing MMA. I had a guest on a few weeks ago who proved that. Did you get to watch any boxing over the weekend? Or was there any boxing events going on?
No, there really wasn't. I followed, a few minor things online, but no Friday night fights and no real big cards on Saturday. Actually, I was pretty under the weather on Saturday. Richard, you're going to laugh at me when you hear this, but just being so wiped out from a couple of rough weeks at work and my basement getting flooded and my gym being out of operation for a while. I was invited out to a birthday party. I was feeling so shitty, I drank soda. I was at a bar drinking soda.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the weirdest habits I noticed Floyd has, even though his staff brings in these buckets full of ice and Powerade and all that good stuff, water, Floyd kept demanding soda. During his workout. And he actually was at one point drinking Mountain Dew from a styrofoam cup. And I'm like, who does that? Who likes to have soda when they're working out like that? Floyd, apparently. It's one of those weird things. Another thing was kind of funny. He comes in, his training staff brings in this giant hockey bag of boxing gloves. We're talking like maybe 100 individual gloves in this bag. That's what it looked like anyway. And a lot of them are all decorated and customized specifically for him. So he comes over to change gloves at one point, and he says something about the burgundy ones. He wants the burgundy ones. And so they get this guy digging through this bag for the burgundy gloves, and he tries to draw purple ones. He's like, no, not purple. I want burgundy.
decided to take, you know, any of the gloves. I don't know if he was just screwing around with the guy or not, but the guy was like, we didn't bring the burger anymore. We don't have them yet. But he wasn't that much of a diva that he couldn't work out without them.
We have a couple of interesting guests on tonight. Starting at 8:30 in a few minutes here, we're going to have Mike Hauben from Fight Summit out here in Vegas. It's a big MMA expo type of thing for business guys in MMA. And then we have Marvin the Beastman Eastman,
nice.
Who is one of those legendary guys in MMA. Goes way, way back in the sport. Been there, done that, and now he's actually coaching this new breed of the IFL, I guess. It's a team league out here in Vegas. There isn't much competition other than the UFC. There's some amateur fights and really nothing else major that I've seen that does more than a show every few months. So this could catch on out here, I think. And we'll have to talk to him about it and see what the concept is all about. Vegas could definitely use more MMA stuff. And it's, they got an event on the 16th, which is, of course, the day before Floyd Mayweather's fight. So people who are already going to be in town for that fight might end up trying to check the MMA out, too, if they're crossover fans. I tend to think more people are pure boxing fans. Boxing and MMA fans, but you know, everybody's got their own flavor, and I think there still are a lot of people that like both like me. So we'll see. But other than that, we'll get to the rest of the news. One thing I did want to mention is we had another death in boxing this week, unfortunately. Good old Pat Petrinelli. Pat.
I heard that. I was going to mention that to you. I just heard that. Was he one of the gentlemen that we spoke with?
No, we haven't spoken to him from the time that I met Tony. Until he died, Pat was always in the hospital.
Okay.
He had some failing health going on years into his death.
I think what can kind of confuse me a little bit, not confuse me, but I think when I first read it, and I was trying to remember some of the guys we interviewed Goody Petrinelli, and then what kept popping in my mind is we interviewed Kip Perone. That's what I kept thinking of.
That told us about being over in England, almost getting mobbed by a riot. That's kind of funny. There were some English guys in the entourage of Floyd there. Some fans from the UK were in the van walking around, and at one point, Floyd said, I'm sick of all this, and moved to the UK. So that was kind of funny. But we had a good time, that's for sure. We didn't really get a chance to talk much about it, but I guess that press conference they had about the Arturo Gatti case has been making the news this week. Basically, they put together a panel. And they have a report that claims that a lot of the situations described as supporting suicide didn't happen that way. There's indications that a severe laceration on the back of Gotti's head couldn't have happened during a fall to the floor. And the position that he was found in, with his head halfway wedged under a cabinet, was not consistent with a hanging, they said. In addition, the handbag strap he alleged that he wasn't strong enough to hold 78 pounds for more than a few seconds, far shorter than the several hours alleged by police based on interviews with Amanda Gotti. And the laceration on his head was caused by a blunt instrument that could have incapacitated Gotti before he strangled himself. Interesting evidence coming out here. Because of the families fighting over the estate. Amanda Rodriguez there is still trying to get hold of all the estates, and Gotti's family is basically fighting them in court and trying to get the Brazilian authorities to reopen the case, which is going to be much easier said than done, if I know anything about Brazilian politics. I don't think you have to know anything to figure out they're going to protect their own. And they want her to bring that money to Brazil, of course. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. It's going to make a hell of a movie or documentary if it turns out that they get any results from this probe.
That would be a very interesting movie documentary. I wouldn't mind seeing that on Case of Forensic Files, one of my favorite shows.
I love that show, but no, they show it every now and then on headlines out here. It pisses me off because they have the local updates, the news, right? And they'll show it late at night out here in Vegas. Then right when they get to the ending, the resolution of the whole case, they flash to the local news report. And they come back to the next episode of Forensic Files. You don't even know what happened in the previous one. At the end of it, it's like you get built up for all that drama, and they tell you what happens. So it sucks. It's like, you know, if you're going to show that, you got to show the whole thing, you know? Every other program, you show the whole thing. One of my pet peeves about Vegas TV. Channel 8 News. So who do the Philadelphia Eagles play this week there?
St. Louis Rams. The Lambs. I'm very excited. That's what I was feeling a good bit of as my football pool.
Huh.
You got that. So that's part of that. And I was actually finishing that a few minutes ago.
I'm doing the fantasy football, and the game was just starting.
Well, I didn't do the fantasy this year. Fantasy, I never really got it. I did it the first 2 years that I really did. But this year, I was not doing the game.
Well, it's a hard year to keep up.
Yeah.
Well, I waited to the last minute. And I think because of all the rush to judgment there and setting up the collective bargaining deal there, it's probably one of the reasons DirecTV went with that promotion to have NFL Sunday Ticket come free with every package. And it's one of those funny commercials that they have there with Deion Sanders as
Pink. Got it, Adrian.
Yeah, he's a wildcat. And anyway, we got to get our guests on the phone here pretty shortly. So, football starts tonight, and I'm going to write about the lead event here. Green Bay versus New Orleans, right?
It's a good game.
Yeah, it's a good kickoff game for sure. Guess they're going to be a good game to start the year. One second.
Oh, God, I thought I one big play we do have coming up. We got the big boys, the heavyweights.
Really?
Yeah, over in Poland, Vitaly Klitschko and Tomasz Adamek.
I am.
And that's the one thing, but, you know, a lot of people even, and a lot of people said it along the same line. You know, Adamek is boxing a lot better. You never know when Klitschko's body is going to fail him with his bad knees and his bad back, and, you know, he is getting older, he's in his late 30s. So that's one thing you can, you know, never take out of the equation. But along the other lines is, you know, he is that much bigger than Adamek. Now, Adamek, what he's done is moving the heavyweight division. He has progressively fought some bigger guys. He's fought guys like Andrew Golota. He's fought guys like Michael Grant. Michael Grant, who was built like Klitschko, 6'7", 250 pounds. But the difference is Grant, and who I've met from Norristown, PA, only about 15 minutes from me, great athlete, never had a good chin, and doesn't have killer instinct. He's too nice of a guy. He hit Adamek with some bombs, you know, but he never accelerated on it. Now, I remember the fight we covered about, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when Adamek fought Cunningham. And aside from those three knockdowns, Cunningham won pretty much the rest of that fight. And he hit Adamek with punches that were lifting his feet off the ground. Now, Adamek's got a very good chin. Cunningham, for as athletic and skilled as he is not a big puncher. And he was still hitting the guy with so many flush shots that he was lifting his lead foot off the ground and buckled him hard a couple times. Add 50 pounds to that, and the guy who is a legitimate puncher in Vitaly Klitschko, if he lands some of them right hands on Adamek, I can see him taking him out. The way I see this fight going, unfortunately I didn't get to write a report on it. I would have liked to. Just timing wasn't in my favor. Adamek is going to try to box. You know, he's going to try to, you know, use a little bit of his speed advantage. He's going to try to get in there and land some bombs on Klitschko because Klitschko is hittable. But in the long run, it's going to be just the superior size, the superior strength, the superior punching power of Klitschko that eventually wears Adamek down, busts his face up like he did to Chris Areola, and forces a stoppage probably around the 10th round.
Yes. It's kind of interesting what's happening now because the UFC signing Overeem. He now is fighting Brock Lesnar. Too close to the UFC here. And he's against the Klitschko's in boxing. He was an actual champion in the K-1 league there, which is obviously completely different from traditional boxing, but he's a big dude, you know, and that's what these guys need. They don't need these overblown light heavyweights bumping up to try to face him. That's not going to do it. You know, and obviously there's no big American heavyweights that are out there threatening for these guys' titles. So, ironically, probably the biggest threat to them would have been Overeem into boxing. So we'll see. I don't know. You know, if Attic can pull it off, it'll be Joe Sloan and be Michael Moore in the 10th. It'll be a miracle, I think. So excited about this fight and I'm trying to find it. But anyway, let's get Mike Calvin on. He is the manager of Fight Summit. He's an interesting character. We have a big setup here in Vegas. First and second of December this year. Summit.com to find all about their organization and what they do, what they're all about. Come on.
15 or so, we're going to have a
hear you guys.
I'm also on the line with Tony.
I'm actually getting a
bad report
to myself.
I'll try to call
you. Yeah, I can hear
you
just a little bit.
Let me try to get right back. Hello? Goodbye. Hello? Hello?
Yeah, because I was even having a... As soon as we got him on the line, everything was back out.
Mike,
is this any better?
I can hear you a little bit, but I can make you out this time.
All right. Well, we're calling you because of your involvement with this, quite a little bit about what that's all about and what to expect for this year's session here in Vegas.
Okay, well, you know, Fight Summit, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
You guys can hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I can hear you. All right, good. So, yeah, so Fight Summit, man, it was, we did the first event last year in December also, and basically our goal was to be the first business-oriented mixed martial arts event. You know, you have the UFC Fan Expo, and that's fantastic for fans, but it just doesn't really address the needs of the business. So, every industry has a conference where you can go and attend workshops and learn from each other and network, but MMA never had that show. They never had that event. So we basically just set out to do that event. The first one was last year. And it was really cool. You know, the turnout was a little weak, but, you know, we knew that happened. It was our first event. But what we did get from last year's show is really great feedback and a lot of supporters of the show. So I think that's going to kind of roll into this year's show. I guess now that we've kind of proven what we can do, yeah, I think that's really the name of the game, trying to have some staying power and just building, you know, each year to year.
And what kind of special guests are you
going to
have up
this
year? It's at the Rio this year, right?
Yeah, it's at the Rio. It's December 1st and 2nd. We have phenomenal speakers. We've got Greg Jackson, Jonathan Schoenberg, who's one of the biggest strength and conditioning coaches. Keith Gostin. We've got some of the best apparel guys. Hans from Triumph United. Mike Kalmanson from Bad Boy. Ryan Loco from Jocko, Pascal Pacto from Do or Die. We've got Mark Pavlich from Maximum Fighting, you know, the biggest promotion in Canada. We've got Joe Kelly from Bellator. So we just have an absolutely all-star cast of speakers. And that, I only named a few of them. We've got, you know, over 25. So if you're a business in mixed martial arts, this is it's very hard to succeed in the industry right now because everyone's self-taught, you know, everyone's kind of figuring out themselves. So this is a cool way to really, pick the brains of people that have been in the industry for a long time and then have been consistently succeeding for a long time. You know, we don't have any speakers that like contacted us after being in business for 2 months. You know, these speakers are guys that have proven themselves and that have been through the trenches and really know what you need to do to be a serious brand in this industry. So it's just cool. It's cool that we get to be the guys to kind of be like the mini college of MMA business. You know what I mean?
Right. And, I've seen it happen. They won when we started.
I'm sorry. I can't hear you there.
Yep, we're here. When I started back in 2006, I saw firsthand what, a little promotion could get caught up in, trying to sell a fight. And, it was a good concept. It was some of the best fights I've ever seen in a cage in one night.
Yep.
And it was just a little rinky-dinks league in Iowa, but they put on a hell of a show. But the only thing was, only 1,000 people showed up, and they rented this huge college stadium.
Right. Wow. Right. Yeah, I mean that's a story like that is very, very, very consistent with what a ton of other people say. You know, a lot of people, they might have an awesome product. They might be able to put an awesome fight event together or have some really cool shirt designs for a new apparel company, but they just don't know all the ins and outs that are going to make or break them. You know, like there's a lot of little things that are crucial, and it's very, it's usually you don't find those things out until it's too late and you're down a ton of money. You know, so it's just good to talk to people and pick their brains a little bit, and that's really never been done until now, so it's exciting.
And I think a lot of it also is, you know, if you can get, you know, sometimes getting things like that, you know, can be kind of hard to put together. One thing that I was fortunate to learn under during my college years was I had a boxing coach in college who was a former wrestling coach, world known. He used to go to clinics over in Russia, and then he would do boxing seminars all over the world. Go to Fiji, he would go to Cuba, he would do it over in Europe, and he's part. You know, he was a manager, a team manager of the one Olympic team in '96. So not only was he training us about boxing, but he was also training us just about other things like marketing, just anything
right.
like that. And if you're trying to get something together and you just get like that one star name on there or somebody with a lot of charisma, and you, that one name can attract just enough people, and then it can open it up to a lot of the other quality people that you have there, then and like I said, I like it because of the networking factor.
Yeah, you know, the networking factor is probably the second biggest reason to come to Fight Summit. I mean, hands down, the first main reason to come to Fight Summit, in my opinion, are the workshops. Because we have a lot of them. We have them for any kind of MMA business, whether you're an apparel company, a gym owner, a trainer, a fighter, a manager, a fight promoter. We have workshops for you. But the networking is huge because, I mean, here's a perfect example. We have a guy, Charles Penner, that came to our event last year. He's a photographer, and he met a few guys from last year, and because of the relationships he formed at Fight Summit last year, he's now shooting the Strikeforce fight that's coming up. So, like, that's a direct reflection. He would have never have made that connection. He would have never met those people. But because he went to Fight Summit and he introduced himself to a few people, now he shoots for Strikeforce. Well, I think he shoots weekly, but he's covering the Strikeforce fight. That's huge.
Yeah, that's
you know, so the people you meet really can leverage a lot of opportunities for you. And that's huge. That's a pretty rare thing in this industry.
Now, if you think about the development of the sport of MMA over this past year, the parent company there, Zuffa, they got a hold of Strikeforce now, and they made this Fox deal. They're moving into that big dog slot, keeping it. And, you know, but a lot of these younger leagues are benefiting from these UFC castaways, too, and keeping them their careers.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, there's a lot of talented guys, but the truth of the matter is in the UFC, they need a constantly revolving pool of new fighters to keep people interested. So, like, guys are getting cut after 2 or 3 fights in the UFC, and it sucks. But, you know, people want to watch either A, people that are winning fights, or B, people that are new and exciting and offer something new. So, you know, you're always going to have a revolving door of guys that had a shot in the UFC. But, I mean, you look at Maximum Fighting, they're a phenomenal promotion. They have a lot of guys that came from the UFC. They also have a lot of guys that never fought in the UFC. But they're giving a lot of guys a great career, and they're giving them a great stage. They're drawing thousands of people. So there's definitely a way to make a living in MMA besides the UFC, and that's a pretty cool thing. You know, a lot of people a lot of people say, oh, the UFC is the only group there is. I mean, they're the biggest group, but they're not the only group. You know, it's good to have some diversity in the organization. But now they bought Strikeforce, so that's a whole other topic. You know.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how they deal with that arrangement. You can tell they're chopping at the bit to just dissolve it.
Yeah, I think everyone knows what they're going to do. I mean, clearly they're taking guys out one by one and bringing them to the UFC. So I don't think many people at this point really think Strikeforce is going to be a sustainable brand for much longer. I mean, they're taking the guys that interested them, they're bringing them to the UFC, and then, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, some people love it. Some people think the acquisition of Strikeforce is phenomenal because you're going to see some guys, some matchups that you wouldn't have seen elsewise. But at the same time, now you've got one organization making most of the shots in the industry. So it's tough on some level also.
Yeah, it's getting to that point where they need some kind of, some kind of a situation to protect the fighters a little better. And the one thing that we've been talking about since we got the show started, even before we were named to the show, was this boxing versus MMA debate. And the one issue we kept hanging on was the pay difference.
Right.
As the business side of it, do you notice the pay difference changing a whole lot in MMA?
I don't think people realize how little pro boxers make. Like, everybody always talks about the Floyd Mayweathers and the Manny Pacquiao that are getting $10 million to fight or whatever ridiculous number it is. But they never talk about the kids that are, 19 years old and they're fighting for $2,000. You know, people don't talk about those guys. But I mean, unless you're a huge, huge star in boxing, you're not making a ton of money. I mean, you're going to make a living. You're going to make a good living. But it's not as drastic as people think. People are like, how come the top MMA guys aren't making what the top boxing guys are? And the answer is that they do. They really do. You look at Anderson Silva, you look at GSP, those guys are making a few million a year plus sponsorships. So, I mean, maybe they're making a few million less, but still making a few million, you know? So I think it's going to keep going like that. You're going to see MMA just getting bigger and bigger, and UFC just signed the deal with Fox. You've got Nike sponsoring Anderson Silva. I mean, it's getting huge. And I think, I think boxing's never going to die out. There's a lot of culture in boxing. There's a lot of history in boxing. And a lot of people don't like the grappling. A lot of people just want to see guys fight it out. So boxing's never going away. But, MMA is getting huge. So I think it's going to even out pretty well.
Yeah, it's interesting to me how Dana White has treated some of these guys who have said that they wanted to go into boxing, Overeem and Dieter Diaz out this week. But it's interesting to see he sort of seemed afraid of that. He didn't want anybody to set that trend. I think the only one trying to do is Kimbo.
I actually can't hear you right now. I can hear one of you very well. One of you I can't hear too well.
That's got to be me. I got the mouth.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear.
He's on speakerphone, so you can hear him a little better.
Okay.
But what do you think about what was the best moment of last year's event?
You know, probably the coolest moment, I don't know about the best moment, but the coolest moment was getting a phone call from Randy Couture. Because Randy Couture spoke at our event last year, and, he's obviously got to arrive at the venue. So, I mean, he called my cell. He called my cell to tell me he was here. So I get an unknown number, a number I've never seen before. I'm like, hello? And he's like, hey, Mike, it's Randy Couture. I was like, what? Randy Couture is calling myself. This is a little overwhelming. You know, it's cool. You know, you watch these guys, you grew up watching them fight, and then all of a sudden they're like not your equals. I mean, I'm not Randy Couture's equal, but you're having like conversations with them and business relationships with them. You know, But I think the best moment of last year is Gambo and the feedback, like the last day of the show. People were like, this was unbelievable, Mike. You know, the turnout was just okay, but I walked away with so much new knowledge and so many new tools. And those are honest-to-God testimonials. Like, we're not, you know, I'm not just making that up. People really walked away and said this was an incredible event. Not only the attendees, but the most of the exhibitors. Some of the exhibitors didn't do too well, but I think that's because, you know, every show you're going to have some guys that just, you know, didn't have the best show people or weren't as organized as they should have been. But the majority of the exhibitors are coming back. The majority of the exhibitors have already signed up to come back this year. And, you know, a lot of them opened up new channels of business, you know. So it's on all fronts, people really believe in the show. And that was definitely the feature where I kind of saw where this could really go, and it could be a big event. It could be pretty spectacular.
So what are you looking forward to most as part of this year's conference?
What am I looking forward to most? Trying to see if we could squeeze everything into 2 days. You know, we did it was 3 days last year, but I think it kind of died out by the third day. You know, I think the MMA industry has a short attention span. And so a lot of young guys, and it's tough to get them to give it your all and wake up at 8 a.m. for a seminar and then go to a seminar at 6 p.m. for 3 days straight, you know. So we get to condense it a little bit, but we had to make sure we offered the same level of education and the same experience. So hopefully the same experience is going to be achieved over 2 days. I think it will. I think it'll be good.
Well, you could always go into sudden death overtime.
We could spontaneously be like, you know what, guys? We tricked you. We're going to do a third day. Little did you know, we rented out this bar down the street, and we have Hugh Speaker that no one knew about.
What would you say is the number one niche business surrounding MMA?
The number one myth?
Niche business. Like, what's the best income stream as far as business?
The best income stream? You know, I think the best income stream, it's a tough one, you know, because I would say being a trainer or running a gym, but the costs to run one of those businesses is very expensive. Like here in New York, I mean, you've got to be a really top-level trainer to survive here. We're in Long Island. You have to be a top guy to survive here because the rent is so expensive. So I would say owning a gym, but I think the costs are too extravagant. I think you really have to look at the costs to run the business versus the income. You know, I think there are some things, like if you do it right, like if you run an apparel company, you know, you could spend a couple of grand and, you know, really make a nice line of shirts if you're creative and start building a network, whereas opening a gym is going to cost you, I mean, $2,000 isn't even going to be a week from New York, you know, so it's, you know, I think there are some guys that are doing something different. You know, there are guys that are coming up with new technologies and new services that people haven't thought of before. And they're the ones that are really doing well.
Right. So how did you first get introduced to the Vegas MMA scene?
How did I get introduced to what?
The Vegas MMA scene. I'm actually out in Vegas right now.
You know, we chose Vegas because it's the fight capital. You know, that's really what it comes down to. We need somewhere where people are willing to travel to. And Vegas is that place. You know, if we did a show in, like, Wyoming, it might draw some people that are near Wyoming, but, you know, people aren't going to travel from all over the world to go to Wyoming. They're going to travel to go to Vegas, though, you know?
What do you enjoy most about what you do as a manager for someone?
You know, it's a ton of work. It's, you know, I woke up I probably got to the office at 6:15 this morning, stopped at about 8 p.m. But what's cool about it is that I love MMA. You know, I love the industry. I get to talk to cool people and cool brands and cool fighters, and it's just exciting. It's exciting. You know, once you figure out a blueprint, it's, you know, the work slows down a little bit, but it's definitely worth the long hours and it's worth the hard work. If you really want to succeed, you have to be willing to put those hours in because your competitors are, you know. You if you're not willing to put those hours in, you don't really stand a chance whatsoever. A lot of people are trying to run an MMA business part time, and it doesn't really work. You really have to put your time and your money into it to make it succeed.
Yeah, and the double game too. That's the most important thing people don't realize. There's so many new sources of media outlets now surrounding MMA, and you don't know who's telling the truth. It's just pulling your legs up to it. Nut circles. There's so many people just providing individual angles. So it's one of those sports that generates a lot of controversy. And I started watching it in 2006. Before that, it was even more rough and tough. And I remember first hearing about it back in the days when Dan Severn was ripping it up. And he was like, WB's talk. But that's like my earliest memory of hearing about it. In 2006. Just seeing it explode.
You're kind of fading out there. I can't make out what you're saying too well.
So what do you think about the growth of the sport over the years?
It's amazing. I don't know if it's as big as people think it is. I mean, obviously the sport is huge, but the industry is relatively small. I mean, you've got a few big guys, but there aren't that many guys that are doing too well. I think it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. And I think it seems like there are all these major brands and all these major apparel companies. Don't really think that's the case. I think that some people are very good at making it seem like they're a huge company. So, and that's unfortunate. I think we've still got some time before we really have a ton of different companies that are doing well. And once the businesses start doing well, obviously they'll push the sport more and more. So we got to, that's what Fight Summit's all about. That's what we're for, I guess.
And any particular favorite fighter that you like to watch or fighters?
I used to have favorite fighters, but now I know some of them now, so I'm biased towards some of the people we've met through Fight Summit, like Rampage Jackson, for example. I wasn't a huge fan of his before. I was not. But one of the people we work with very well, Hans from Triumph United, Rampage is his boy. So now I feel obligated and excited to root for Rampage because I know he's buddies with one of my buddies. So I just want to see an awesome fight. It's really not the fight. I like a tough fighters, but as long as it's a good headlining fight, I'm gonna order that pay-per-view.
I found it really interesting when you run into fighters at events and as a reporter. I usually get to go right down and talk to them after before their fights and everything. And you get to the point where, you can go to try to handicap a fight and predict what's going to happen. You're going to go with the guy that you've talked to that you've interviewed before. Like, kind of automatic. You want to root for the guy that you sort of know.
Right, exactly.
Before. So it kind of screws me up a lot of times because, when we do the UFC previews, I almost always go with the guy that I've had on the phone before.
Right.
One of the funniest things that ever happened to me at an MMA event was actually when the John Jones was like a New England event. And it was down at Foxwoods, and he knocked the guy out in like 30 seconds. But, it was an interesting fight. At one point, before any of the fights started, pointed to Chicago, Dan, was that Gabriel Gonzaga? And I go, it's not, right? And I went right over to this guy, and I said, the guy over there thinks you're Gabriel Gonzaga. and he looks at me, and he's like, I am.
So, it's kind of funny. I think he lost the fight.
Didn't like that story. But yeah, I got a good interview out of him. So, voice didn't come out that well. Well, sounds like we have a dead battery, Johnny.
Hey guys, this is Mike Calvin at Fight Summit. Leave me a message and I'll call you back.
At the tone,
Please record your ass.
Give him some time to plug his phone back. We only got a few minutes here before we have to call.
I didn't feel it so much. I'm worried my phone's going to die tonight.
Uh-oh.
Well, I got a charge with most of me.
Well, we are prepared if that happens. Just to give everybody an update, Green Bay is crushing it.
What's the score?
14-0 already. New Orleans had a pretty tough fumble. The Green Bay scored right off the bat within 5 minutes. And then, whoa, I spoke too soon. There goes New Orleans with a big play. Sproles just had an unbelievable pass right down the middle. New Orleans is still acting like they're in it. But, we had... the fight summit guy on there for a little while.
The next guest we're going to have
is Marvin the Beastman Eastman. His record is 17-13-1. And he fought pretty much who's who in the sport of MMA. Fought way back at the King of the Cage, Maximum Fighting Championships, and the UFC. And he won over guys like Quentin Rampage Jackson, Vernon Tiger White, Jason McDonald, Alan Belcher, Travis Wolf, Jason Guida, Rob Timmons, and Terry Martin. And he's also fought Rich Franklin, Vitor Belfort, Travis Lambert, Jason Lambert, Drew McFedry, Dennis Kang, and Ricardo Arona. And now he's going to pass on all his knowledge and experience to guys from Team Eastman in this new league. So I'm excited to see what he is. Hear what he has to say. But let's see if we can get Mike one more time. If not, we know where to find him. He's at fightsummit.com, and information's on the website about the summit, December 1st and 2nd. But we'll see if we can get back. I don't like to start a new interview without signing up the first one properly. Well, this is scored touchdown. Please, 80 yards.
Hey guys, this is Mike Calvin at Fight Summit. Leave me a message and I'll call you back.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey Mike, this is us. Sorry we couldn't finish out the interview properly, but we're going to move on to Marvin the Beastman Eastman next, so thanks for stopping by. It was good having you, and definitely look forward to getting updates on see how it goes this year. We'll be in touch. Thanks. Bye. So there we go. We're going to move on to the next level here. Mike is obviously out of range. So, that's what we get. At least we got him to hear us in the first place. That's really important. So, is it raining yet there in Philadelphia again?
Oh, man, we had so much floods today, and I mean, my place, we didn't get hit too bad last night, but just a few miles south of where I live, where I used to work, actually, was impassable. My dad had been gone for 11 days out on, emergency storm work. He got back on Tuesday, he's already gone again. So, doing all that. He came out of time, man.
Yeah, it's, it was pretty intense just watching all these reports about the flooding in some of these places that didn't exist.
expect to get hit so hard, especially from Mott. Who would have thunk? But Mott would get slammed. So, these covered bridges just gone. Some of the roads, I mean, my father actually sent me this series of pictures from the helicopters over Vermont, and just the way the roads are washed out, it's unbelievable. The entire road ripped apart. So, I don't know, they were saying on some news channels that the damn hurricane was like a stimulus plane.
I got the truth.
Sort of thing, you know, emergency funding. And it was kind of funny tonight to see the president taking advantage of the football season kickoff to make everybody watch him on TV. I wasn't even really paying attention to what he was saying, but I was waiting for football, so I had to listen. We got a couple of quick news hits I want to touch on before we get to Marvin on here. We had an MMA instructor from Watertown, South Dakota, killed a guy in a fight last spring. And just sentenced to jail. Jaron Stulkin, 29 years old, pled guilty in August to second-degree manslaughter and aggravated assault. He got sentenced Wednesday afternoon to 7 years in prison for each count to be served concurrently. And he's also going to have to pay court costs and pay $8,600 to Justin Dutone's family. Stulkin and the victim got into a fight in the parking lot of a Watertown bar on March 13th. Dutone died 18 days later in a Sioux Falls hospital. He initially faced alternate counts of murder and manslaughter. Interesting case. We just talked about a couple weeks ago the case of the Russian dude punched a guy outside a nightclub for flirting with his girlfriend and killed him instantly, pretty much. So don't use MMA to prove you're a good bar fighter. Personnel, period, I think, is the lesson to take home there. Serious consequences.
You look at it in, like this. I mean, now, for most people that, you know, are relatively trained, a lot of people know, like, the limitations of, you know how they could, you know, hurt somebody and hurt somebody pretty seriously rather quickly. I knew a guy from college. He was a 3- or 4-time All-American. He was a good fighter. He turned pro, had a few pro fights. But I remember he missed. It was, I think, his junior year when I was a freshman. He missed like 2 months because he had broken his hand in a bar fight, you know. And he hurt the guy pretty good, you know. We knocked out a few of the teeth. He just hit it with like a 3-punch combination for the guy even, you know, really to even react to it. Which thing me and you are going to square off in a boxing match or a street fight. We both know how to throw our hands and, you know, how to throw proper type punches. Most of these clowns that, you know, you see in a bar, you see on the street, well, maybe they try to take these big swinging roundhouse punches that are ineffective at best. And second of all, you know, they don't know how to defend against the punch. So one of these guys, you know, they wear their right hand back to throw a big bomb, and I throw, you know, uppercut, left hook, right hand over the top, and they're done and out. You hurt a guy like that real quickly. So, you know, you can understand where the threat is in there.
That there's all those lines in the movies, you know, my hands are registered as lethal weapons. You know, if you really know how to fight, period,
You know, fighting should scare you in that setting, especially when you're drunk and you don't feel anything. You know, what used to set me off when I was a young kid, right up through my teenage years in high school, the first couple of years in high school, was if anybody would say your mother, you know, because my mom died when I was young, the switch would flip. And, you know, that's what really ended up getting me into boxing in the first place, to control it. You know, when you're out in public and you snap and, you know, anything can happen and you're literally on a sidewalk or in a park, you know, you can really kill somebody. And, you know, I actually got to experience that feeling of both of those, you know, really ruining a guy's day. Even long after I was a kid, just getting in a road rage incident on the side of the road. And, you know, my boss at the time kept telling me, you know, you could have killed the guy. You got to consider that. You got to think about that. And thankfully, when we ended up on the ground, we were on the shoulder of the road instead of on the pavement. But it might happen in the middle of the road with a school bus full of kids watching. So, and the guy had actually, at the point that the fight ended and I got off him, he said he wanted me to hit him again. Because I asked him, you had enough? And he shook his head, no. So he kind of was asking for it, and I didn't give it to him. You know, I just, you know, snapped out of it, got off him, got back in my car, and left. But it was just one of those days. But anyway, we're going to get Marvin Eastman on the line. He's had a few days like that in the cage without road rage. We'll get him on, and we'll talk about this new Vegas league. I'm pretty excited about it because, you know, I can't really get free tickets to any UFC events yet, typically. That's tough to do if you want it for the Fertittas like I am. But, you know, this little young league here, going back to the team concept, it's been a long while. Should be interesting.
Green Bay with a touchdown, Rich.
Another one. Cobb. Yeah, just piling it on. I'll tell you, you know, what really makes the difference for Green Bay is not only they have a good quarterback, but, you know, I actually think, I don't think I've ever heard anybody else use the term, but I call them a J-team, because they either have a last name that starts with J or a first name. Just about every guy. It's just unbelievably talented, you know. They're fast, and they elevate for the ball.
Almost didn't make the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
They got in on the last day.
I'm sure their defense is pretty good, too. But that offense and those receivers, I mean, they lucked out with that kind of talent. And none of those guys are, like, you know, league-best paycheck guys either. And it kind of reminds me of the best days of the Patriots when it was that team concept, too. And, you know, that builds the success. So it's good to see that team, you know, breaking out, too, because they have such a history, too, with Vince Lombardi and, you know, Brett Favre, even. You know, saying his name these days is almost a dirty word because nobody wants to see him try to give it another shot.
No more.
But back in the day, you know, that was really the last time that Green Bay was really, really good when he was at the height of his career. So it's good to see them getting back in it. You know, they want them to get back to the Super Bowl. On our teams to be there, but I don't know. Yeah, you can't overlook them on the scorecard or the schedule this year. And where is Marvin?
I don't know where I'm at.
I'm trying to find his number here. I just put it into the system. Oh, boy. Got it here somewhere. New Orleans had one touchdown. Green may have had two more since my first one. About 5 minutes in. Good game. We'll see if Norwin is up to the task for a comeback here. Did you watch any college football this last week here, buddy?
No, I didn't. I used to love watching college football when I could bet on it. Now that I don't bet on college football anymore, I didn't watch a game last year at all. Seriously.
Yeah. I think it was an Ohio team. One of the most interesting games this past week. They're getting smacked up by this one team. They came back in like the last 5 minutes with down, an onside kick, and down. It's a really safe game. So close. And then back. That was pretty exciting. I don't know. Watching college football. Air Force Academy, getting to watch those games, and that was like the biggest all those memories. Yeah, I can hardly voice. Yeah, they have to be playing somebody to be covered. So they do always put together a good team for. The fact that, you know, you can only go there if you sign over 5 years of your life to the service of your country.
I remember I've been in a lot of Air Force games.
Yeah, it was a damn good team. We had the privilege when I was there of having a quarterback named Bo Morgan. And, you know, the Air Force and Navy are pretty much wishbone and option. And the military each other is always interesting because they have that similar style, most of them. But the quarterback is the key on the Air Force offense, and he runs most of the time or hands it off to the back. But every now and then they'll throw a pass up there, and it's like 90% successful. watching them have to deal with that type of game and that type of style. They traditionally use year after year after year after year, and nobody could quite figure out that well. It's always a toss-up. It's nothing like watching it off. But, you know, watching it on TV isn't bad when you get a good game. But, let's see. We get Marvin on again. Ed Marvin. Unlimited combat sports show. A few minutes late here, but I'm trying to get you on the line. We'll give you a shout back about 10 to 5. All right. So we'll try him back. At least we got the number in the system now. I don't know what happened there. I thought I had added him in there earlier. But, here's a boxing story. We had Andre Berto just won a fight.
Yeah, I
heard that. Berto was about to fight Floyd Mayweather Jr. a few months ago, but Victor Ortiz ended up getting the fight. after he beat Birdo. So, it's luck of the draw, I guess, was what happened. And Birdo won this fight. I'm trying to find out who he fought. Jan Zavec, who came into the fight with the belt, the IBF welterweight championship. And so Birdo ended up getting a piece of the welterweight title. This article says Birdo landed a few solid body shots early. Zavec countered with his own body shots. Both fighters landed solid shots as they checked each other's chins early. Birdo had the advantage of the quicker hands in the first round. And Zavec's right eye started to swell in the fifth round. Birdo showed swelling under the left eye. Both of them started to nail each other with vicious shots, including right to the head, vicious body shots, and Birdo added uppercuts. When Zavec came back to his seat, his right eye was swollen shut and the left eye was cut. Zavec wanted to continue with his corner, feared for his safety, as he could not see out of his right eye, and his left eye was starting to close as well. After the fight, Zavec's eyes were near slits. This was a close fight for five rounds, as both guys needed to have close quarters. That was that. Pretty good win for him.
Well, they put him right back in the mix, so... a lot of the times the last fight next weekend, you know, they were the most heat, and like, shit, I better start working my preview pretty damn soon, maybe Sunday night. Reminded me about that. So, obviously, you know, you gotta see what happens with that winner. Also, for the winner of Pacquiao, Mark, see what happens there. And, you know, he's a good fighter. I mean, was he his best in that Ortiz fight? No, he wasn't. Was he overtrained? I don't know. Or was he just that good that night? It really, you know, battered Berko around. I guess we'll find out more about Ortiz in days. But, no, he definitely, Berko took a shellac in that. Have to, see how he recovers from that. You know, this week, beat the guy up pretty good, but he did take some hellacious shots and run.
Yeah, definitely, I think it's going to be a good fight between Floyd and Ortiz, but it's definitely, I think Floyd has a good chance of just jumping right back. Like I said, 2012 is going to be for Pacquiao fighter that happens, and a lot's being said about Ortiz being a southpaw. And like some people would try to call a tune-up fight, but there's people than usual out there saying that like it is. So I don't think it's taken. Faith in him, especially in one on one. He called the worker guy before. He's very, very fast. He was doing the shoulder roll routine. Like he does in an actual fight. And since I haven't actually seen him before, I don't know whether he usually does that when he's in the mix. Either have dropped that style altogether for some reason in the gym or moved away from it. I don't know. Interesting, though. Seeing the difference between him actually getting in boxing and the way he trains. We're going to try Marvin once more. See if we can get him connected. Message was right to the point, the message or a message. So hopefully he got his message. How's it going? This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. Fight
you, hey, how you doing, brother?
Great. Glad to have you on the line here. You've got a big event coming up on the 16th. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, we got, I can tell you about my guys, and then, you know, the show in general is great because, you know, keeps all those guys that, you know, that are up and coming and learning the game. It allows them to get some experience and you know, and you can take your lumps here, and it doesn't count when you decide to turn professional, you know. But I have two guys, one guy named Jordan. We've got two amateur championships already. He's wrestled with me off foot. I've coached him a wrestling for the last 10, 11 years. He's won now, and he's fighting in the card. And I also have my firstborn on the card too, the third, and he's 2-1, and he won his last fight by unanimous decision and got fight of the night. So he's in the 45s, and David is fighting at 55. So, you know, and both of them are wrestlers, and my son did Muay Thai for about 11, 12 years too, so he's got some experience. I guess the only thing you got to do is work on is a little bit more of the ground, the jiu-jitsu stuff, you know. But and like I said, but it's going good. I'm glad to be a part of it and being able to watch these young guys come up and try to make a name for themselves.
All right. And tell us about the concept of this league. It sounds like it's a team situation, kind of like the IFL, but it's amateur, like you said, right?
Yeah, well, basically what it is they develop like a team concept to kind of try to rally and get support for these guys locally. And you have, you know, name guys in the corner, kind of celebrity a little bit, you know, if you want to call it that. And, you know, it's a team concept, you know, but most definitely it just kind of almost – pretty much the same way like the IFL's youth was doing. And, you know, it could be positive, it could be negative, but for the most part, I think it's a positive because it, you know, gives the guys an opportunity to go as a team, train together as a team, and try to do something locally and make a name for themselves, you know. But as a whole, it just brings the community together and brings, you know, fighters locally and from out of town together to be able to try to, you know, support this MMA business now, since it's not just some small little league. It's actually pretty huge, and actually I still think now it's bigger than boxing. You know, people used to be able to know who the boxing heavyweight champion was, you know, 8-10 years ago. Now they have no idea, just because MMA has passed it so. I mean, it's overtaken it so far. And even in this amount of time.
Right. And the two teams, it's MMA Explosion. The two teams you guys are trying to field are the Las Vegas Spiders and the Las Vegas Scorpions, I see here. And the event's going to be at the Joint at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino on the 6th
yeah.
Friday.
Yeah. And most definitely it's in like I said. It's good to support the local. It's great to fight.
You're breaking up on us there.
Yeah, Thompson Mac and a couple of hotels around here, but you know, the Joint is pretty small. It's compact, but it's actually got a great atmosphere, and you know, give these guys a feel of what it feels like to actually fight in a place that holds events like the WEC was holding and the UFC doing their shows there too. So it's great. And I'm hoping to get a good turnout, you know, so guys can get opportunity to shine a little bit, you know.
Yeah, I'm actually here in Vegas myself now, and I've been around to a few of the gyms. I've been to Extreme a few times. I interviewed Randy's son, Ryan, and I went to a grappling show there and met Randy in person. it's kind of funny that Vegas doesn't have a lot of other leagues besides the UFC. You know, obviously they're the big dog in the world of MMA, but they're also the big dog in town. It seems like a lot of leagues who might start up here seem to think it's not possible because the UFC has a stranglehold here. But you guys are actually coming up in a good market because there really isn't much to offer outside the UFC here. They're really diversifying and going all over the country now, so there's not so many shows out here in Vegas where they're headquartered.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, you know, like I said, obviously when the UFC has a show out here, you know, obviously they're going to sell out and do whatever. You know, and there's other shows here, and it's good. But, you know, like I said, it's not as much an event. You know, obviously, you know, there's no, I mean, UFC has a monopoly on everything. There's nobody that, you know, can compete with them statewide. I mean, and they own everything here, you know, so they do have the market. But it's UFC as a brand, and you know, people kind of, label the UFC with the type of fighting you do. So you have an event and they don't really understand. So, oh, they fight at UFC fighting. You know, they kind of think, well, and it's okay because they at least they understand what it is you're talking about, you know. But with this, like I said, I mean, you know, the UFC doesn't have any competition. It's they're you know, a conglomerate, but at least, you know, and some of the, what it does is gives to some experience.
Really breaking it up again. Yeah, it's interesting though to see the UFC get branded that way to the point where even this new MMA movie Warrior makes the mistake of calling the local level of MMA fighting UFC fighting. Situation that's come up just because that's the most recognizable thing out there. It's interesting. I always bring this up. But we had a fighter on one time from the UFC. I can't for the life of me think who the original person who said this was, but he said there's something wrong with MMA when recognizable figure in the sport is Dana White.
Well, I said that too.
I think I lost the last part of what you were saying. I couldn't hear what you said.
Well, basically, I just said that one of the UFC fighters that we had on the show before told us that the main thing, main issue with MMA, the most recognizable figure in the sport is Dana White.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Most definitely. And see, what people don't understand is the UFC markets the UFC. They don't market any specific fighter. And you have this person or that person, they just feature fighters. But the UFC is a brand, and it's the UFC presents. And then you know that you have people in there. But, you know, you have stars. You have Pierre, St. Pierre. You got Quentin, and you got, you know, a bunch of other people. But most definitely, you don't really have anybody specific. I mean, you know, you think about UFC, and like I said, you think about it as a brand. So it's associated with MMA, you know, oh, UFC fighting, well, they know it's MMA. But any other venue, if you say, I do MMA, it's, oh, you mean that UFC fighting. So, you know, and that's just the way it is because they were the one that started. So, you know, it's not a thing. As long as you've got,
that's my one pet peeve with it, you know, these guys, especially after this Fox deal, they obviously made over $100 million, you know, why not start paying these guys that are main events six figures every time they fight? You know, it's not somebody getting $1 million one day for a fight, that would be nice to see. But, you've been all around in MMA. Tell us a little bit about some of your best fights over the years.
What's that? I lost you.
Tell us a little bit about some of your best fights over the years in MMA.
Well, I feel like the game, you know, because, you know, most guys buy the you know, and I kind of made a choice way back, you know, you're either, you know, go and fight in pride, full on and leave my job, or go ahead and, you know, stay here statewide and keep doing my job as a full-time officer and try to fight on the side. You know, worked out. I had my and won a couple of world championships, and you know, and you know, I guess everybody, the pinnacle of success is always probably, you know, you either won a Pride championship or UFC championship, but there's still some other significant organizations around here that still, you know, and I got the opportunity to win, you know, 3 or 4 belts. You know, unfortunately for me, you know, that the UFC thing was the one that just I had the most worst luck in the world with that all alone. So I take my lumps like a man. You know, I beat some of the guys and I've lost to some of the best guys. I just always feel like, for me, it's always been, there's always, you train some asterisk or something. You know, I feel like I'm like one of the most talented in there, but just one of the most unlucky individuals, you know. So, but I'm okay. At least with my successes, I will be able to, and failures, I'll be able to show my guys, you know, the 5 or 6, 7 guys, amateur guys that I got fighting under me, how to, you know, not make the same mistakes that I did, you know. And you know, they got a plethora of weapons at disposal, and hopefully get the opportunity to use them once upon a time when they turn pro. They can use a little now, but right now it's just they don't have the opportunity simply because they're not professional, you know. But you know, I guess you know, some of the best ones, you know, obviously I hate to beat Belfort, I lost to him, but then beat Quinn the second time, you know, and you know, Travis View and, you know, a whole bunch of guys like that that was on the card, you know. And like I said, I guess that's the nature of the beast. Not like boxing where, you know, you lose 1 fight, 2 fights, guess what, you're washed up. Well, you can lose 3 or 4 fights in MMA and then come back and win a championship, and guess what, the 3 or 4 losses or something like that don't mean to make a deal. I mean, make a big deal, you know, a la Forrest, you know. He beats Quentin, but he gets knocked out by Jardine, and you know, he loses to this person, and he beats this person. He beats Shogun one time, and he loses to Shogun. So, and they still rank him, you know, hey, he won a world championship, he won, and stuff like that. So that doesn't really define him, you know. So that's the really good thing about this sport, you know. Not, it's totally not like boxing.
Right. Yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from with the luck aspect of it, too, because I just got finished a couple weeks ago with a story about this Dan Hardy guy. 4 fights in a row in the UFC, and they still keep him around. And
yeah,
people know one of the reasons why is because he's sponsored by Zions. And the Fertitta,
yeah, yeah,
in the UFC also owns Zions. And
yeah,
they decided to put him on the collector can, they called it, of the Zenergy drink.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got that branded with the UFC. They can't afford to lose him as a you know, big name sponsor and product sponsor.
Oh, most definitely. Most,
yeah,
definitely. Yeah. Oh man, most definitely. I gave you a prime example. You remember what Brock Lesnar did after he won that fight, and you know, he dissed
Coors Light.
Uh-huh. You there?
Yeah, I remember that.
Any other fighter would have been, they would have been done.
Right.
They would have been done. They would have been cooked. There's no, you cannot a major sponsorship like that for a new competition and think that you're going to stay around, but you see, you know, Brock came back and apologized real, real fast after he took a tongue lash. I tell you what, you know, it's far and few between. There's only so many people that can do that, you know. There's some people can do it, some people can't, you know. And like this, I still believe that people, you know,
say that again. Hello?
Hello?
Yep, I can hear you now.
Okay. I just said Tito Ortiz was the face of UFC, and all of a sudden he loses a couple fights, and now he's washed out, you know. And then, you know, then he comes back and he wins a fight, and he takes a fight on a you know, spare moment, you know, to hold him down, and he ends up losing. Well, that's part of the game, you know. That guy's been around. He's rolling around when it had nobody else, you know. So I told him to give him 100% respect, you know. But that's the game. That's how it is. It's always somebody new and hungry coming up behind you, you know.
Right. Tell us a little bit about that aspect of, you know, now being a coach and, like you said, being able to pass the stuff on to the next generation. And what's changed a lot about the sport since you came up in it?
Well,
in politics.
I mean, there's a lot more money, obviously, but one of it is that, I mean, you know, there wasn't any regulation that still was, you know, we were considered these crazy fighters and everything. It just, you know, and then the money, you know, you had, I mean, I can remember fighting King of the Cage and a guy would fall out. And I remember, you know, Jerry Chillicothe offering a guy $300 to come off the ring, I mean, off the audience to fight, to have a fight with Quentin, you know. It's like, you know, to fill in a spot. Well, obviously, you can't do that anymore. But that's, it just considered kind of like a, just, it wasn't mainstream. But now, you know, all the lumps and the bruises we all would cook, there's, you know, these guys don't have to do that anymore. It's mainstream. It's regulated. It's accepted by the boxing commissions, you know. And the only other aspect of this place is that would make a big difference is the fact that, that these guys are getting paid. I mean, you're taking, because you still got guys fighting, making, you know, $2,000-$3,000 off fights. I mean, you know what I'm saying? And then you got, you know, four or five or six guys making six-figure income. So, you know, I mean, you know, you, well, who wants to fight for $2,000 or $3,000? I mean, they make it, they're a billion-dollar industry, and guys are still making $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. Well, yeah, the incentive is to knock somebody out to get bonuses, but you know, I mean, they're a minimum. The guy should, you know, be, you know, no less than, you know, $10,000-$12,000 a fight, you know. But you know, if a good business person's gonna make money and preserve the business for them, you know. So I totally understand the business aspect of it, but there's a lot of guys out here that's starving. Not really starving, but I mean, it's just a figure of speech. Not making a lot of money. You know, that's why you still got guys making $1,000, $500, but, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, a multi-million-dollar industry, and you still got guys. So, you know, hopefully it'll catch up, because, I mean, it's not everybody can do this. A whole bunch of people would like to do it, but not everybody can do it. So, for me, I you know, somebody had to pioneer this. A whole bunch of those guys have pioneered. They got to touch a little bit of money, but the kids that's coming up below us, they'll get the opportunity to make five- and six-figure income. But, you know, like I said, from a business standpoint, I mean, you know, of course, what person that owns a business doesn't want to make a profit? You know, I mean, from what I know, I've kind of heard of Dana White's worth about $150 million anyway, just by itself. So that ain't nothing to sneeze at. And he ain't never fought one day in his life. And I'm not mad. He's a businessman. He helped make the UFC. So he deserves the money he's getting. But, you know, I mean, there should be a lot of million-dollar fighters, and I don't know too many of them.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, the guys that really put the blood sweat of the organization are, you know, starting to get taken care of better, but it's only because the UFC is just making so much money.
Oh, yeah.
And these guys have gotten away with years of just pocketing profits and not being called out to get more of the fighters.
Yeah.
And I think now, actually, in the wake of the deal with Fox, we now have actually seen three or four fighters get 7 and 8 fight contracts, which I never heard of before that. So it's interesting to see.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll change. But the unfortunate thing about it is when you don't have any competition, it makes it very, very difficult for. I mean, when you don't have any competition, you're a conglomerate or you're a monopoly. Well, you can set the rules. You know, I'm not telling you there's some people that's not getting fair, but you know, like I said, my objective as a business person is to make as much money for my business as I possibly can. So, I mean, I'm not speaking as a fighter, I'm speaking as a business person and vice versa. You know, the business person, the person who's fighting, they want to make as much money as they can too, because they're the ones taking a beat and getting beat up and doing all this other kind of stuff. So I totally understand that. But the bottom line is, man, there's a lot of money out there, and it ain't really going to the fighters. You know what I'm saying? Believe me, like I said, you look at the purses. You know, the million-dollar fighters, I mean, you can name one or two of them on your hand. You know, that guy's $500,000, $400,000, $200,000, and endorsements make a big deal, but how many guys really got major endorsements? You know, major endorsements, you know? So, I mean, and that's just, unfortunately, that's just the way it is. Hopefully, you know, but this sport is only, you know, mainstream, maybe 10 years old. I ain't talking about back in the 90s. I'm talking about mainstream. You know, the last 10 years, and from the fighters to be making now.
Yeah, it almost seemed recently when the UFC made the change to add the fighter insurance, it seemed like Dana White was up there trying to actually preempt a union starting by making moves like that.
Hey, I'm sorry. Phone dropped.
Is it dying or are you just in a tough spot?
What's that?
Is the phone dying or are you just in a tough spot?
Nah, I'm just, my phone doesn't, I mean, the place where I'm at doesn't have a good, really good reception, so I'm trying not to move, so. But
better as it's gone along, as it cut out every now and then.
Yeah.
What I was just saying is it was kind of interesting to see Dana White institute that policy on medical coverage. And it seemed like it was at a time where there was a lot of talk about a fighter's union. So, which actually would be a good idea if they could do it for both boxing and MMA. I think it's, you know, just fighters in general, you know, no matter what sport it is, you know, it's a rough life. And it's also, unfortunately, one of those situations where people think, oh, he's a fighter, he's not smart, so let's take advantage of him. You know, and it's not true. A lot of these guys are really smart, and they depend on, you know, their paychecks because they're just, they happen to be good at fighting as well. And it takes a really smart guy to make it in the business sometimes, because you have to get those endorsements, like you said, and the sponsorships, and that's what gets really a lot of guys by still. And I think it was just a few months ago that there was a guy on a preliminary card that I noticed in the UFC and getting paid $3,000 for a fight.
Oh yeah, that's not unusual. I mean, that's not unusual at all. I mean, I could tell you this, you know, guy that they picked up and it's on a prelim card, yeah, $3,000-$5,000. That's normal. That ain't nothing. That's small. Nothing. That's, you know, but I can tell you this, I would much rather get paid than be, I tell you what, I can't see how people actually fight on dream cards, because it's customary for this guy to have to get paid for 6 or 7 months. You know what I mean? Come on. If there's no way in the world, and the funny thing is, those guys actually keep fighting on that card. Come on. You mean to tell me you're not going to pay me for 6 months, 7 months, and then all of a sudden one day my check comes in the mail? Please. And those guys still keep fighting in that organization. Tonight, nobody should fight in there. But that's happening. That is happening. I fought in Brazil a couple years ago, and Jeff Munson and Alex Steveling and a couple other guys flew over, and they didn't even get paid. It was 5 or 6 months before they actually got their checks. You know, I'm like, please, you guys actually signed contracts to fight with these guys? This is ridiculous. But they still have organization. And I hear the guy like, you know, he's got a lot of money, but he gambles his money and stuff, but he just keeps fighting in this organization. That's crazy. But you know, so you don't really have a choice. Either you fight in Bellator or something, or, you know, or if you fight in the UFC, everybody wants to fight in the UFC. But like I said, there's no competition. I mean, and I'm not talking bad about any other organization competition-wise. I mean, UFC is hands down. Any place you can buy your main competition, which is Pride, if you can buy them out and not use them and shut them down, you're a pretty big organization, you know? So you don't have any leverage. All the leverage is gone, you know?
So unfortunate, too, to see the way that they've changed the landscape to the point where, you know, what they did with Pride, people so easily forget, but in the wake of that, a lot of fighters' contracts just went out the window, and a lot of pissed off fighters. So we're told that there's going to be a Super Bowl of MMA, they're going to keep this organization live and viable, and then they go and kill it. And now with this Strikeforce deal earlier this year, that are salivating for when they'll do the same thing with Strikeforce and just tear it apart and bring the junk into the UFC or the best stuff into the UFC and discard the junk, you know. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
You know, their ruthless is getting so many kudos from people, you know, that should be actually standing up more for the treatment of the fighters.
Well, like I said, even with that, I mean, think about it. I mean, well, you know, the Markport thing, you know, that's a lot of stuff people don't know about that situation. It wasn't just the UFC cutting Markport. You know, Markport, you know, I would never put the guy on blast, but there's some issues with that, and he goes and he fights somewhere else. But it's because he was part of their company for a long time, and guess what? You know, he made some mistakes that he... You know, they covered for him for a couple of times, and all of a sudden they couldn't cover for him anymore, so they had to let him go, you know. So, you know, like I said, I would never disrespect and talk about anybody like that because that's not my business. Whatever you decide to do is your business. I know how I get out, and, you know, so I don't, you know, whatever people decide to do, they have to bear their own crosses with that, you know. But you know, like I said, where else do you go? You leave the UFC, you go somewhere else, well... You know, I don't want to be fighting in Africa and all of those kind of crazy places. But unfortunately, like I said, hey, either you do it the UFC's way or you don't. You go fight somewhere else, you know? So, and it's a business. And that's what people don't understand sometimes is it's a business first, you know?
I suppose the one main benefit there is, you know, you do get to use the UFC name either in a spot or three times or the it does help have that label, you know, former UFC fighter, if you do end up getting put out of the organization. Some of the things that they do because they're in charge is just unfortunate. But, Margaret, we're running out of time here, and I wish we could talk more, but it's great stuff.
Huh?
And I'd like to try to get out to this event on the 16th and meet you in person and see what kind of team you got out there.
For sure, man. I appreciate it, bro. Man, I thank you for the opportunity, bro. Thank you so much. But and I'll be there, just, you know, coming out with me, okay?
All right. Thanks a lot. Good chat, man.
Thank you. Bye bye.
So there you go. We are definitely running out of time. We got a few seconds left here. It's a halftime in the football game, and I got to get writing on that for my other gig there. And also, tonight, check the blog early tomorrow, and we'll get on that. We'll get on the Floyd Mayweather footage. So, until next week, Tony, we'll try to get a boxing guest for you again.
Oh, thank you.
We've been slacking on the boxing, so.
All right. All right, until next week, man.